This is the Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. Thrilled to be with you. Bunch of stuff to talk about. All kinds of places to find Dana Lash if you need to find her anywhere and everywhere. X is a great way to do it. The Dana Show or Dana D Lash is one of the ways. She's on TV. She's everywhere. All right. Let's do some stuff. So first, the Obamas spoke last night at the DNC. Michelle Obama once famously said, when they go low, we go high. Apparently, that's no longer necessarily the exactly accurate way to say things if you were them, because they went low several times. Both of them did. There is some question as to whether or not Barack Obama made a manhood joke about Donald Trump. I'll get to that in a little bit. The thing I thought was most interesting, though, or the thing that really seemed to grab a lot of people, is when Michelle Obama talked about not taking any more than her family needed. Now, a couple caveats before I attack this way of speaking, because it matters. First, I'm not going to go after people who are just wealthy in general. That's a silly thing. It happens in our society a lot, but I think it's silly. However, if the way that certain people within our political system made all their money was through said political system, then they essentially made the money off of our backs. They made the money in a way that doesn't actually sell a product, doesn't do the things that the private sector does. So I think a really interesting exercise for you, for me, for anyone out there on the left that believes that the good guys are the Democrats who suit up each day and try to fight for the little people, or try to, you know, make this awesome thing, the government that they call it, that's horrible to a lot of us and not actually helping us every single day. And I'll get to that too. But they'll make it as friendly and as nice as possible. That's the premise. So just look up the net worth of all of these left-leaning Bernie Sanders-esque human beings who yell about how much they care about the little people and everyone that, you know, doesn't have as much as the elites have. And you quickly realize how many Democratic political elites exist that have no private sector work, and yet all of a sudden they're worth millions and millions of dollars after being in politics for a few years. Even AOC is now already worth millions of dollars, which is nuts, because the only job she had before getting into politics was a bartender, famously. So it doesn't seem to make sense. It should be something that makes a lot of Americans very mad, and it should be something that makes words like this actually fall flat. No matter how inspiring they are, if you listen to them and hear them, and, you know, politics aside, both of the Obamas are good public speakers. But nonetheless, when you realize the thing going on behind the scenes, when you realize all the crap that they're leaving out when they say this stuff, you should immediately realize just how ridiculous it is to stand up and cheer for someone that has a net worth of $160 million, multiple homes, all kinds of, you know, high-end, elite lifestyle things, telling us that her family was taught at a young age not to take more than they need.
You see, my mom, in her steady, quiet way, lived out that striving sense of hope every single day of her life. She believed that all children, all people have value, that anyone can succeed if given the opportunity. She and my father didn't aspire to be wealthy. In fact, they were suspicious of folks who took more than they needed.
Like you?
They understood that it wasn't enough for their kids to thrive if everyone else around us was drowning.
Okay, that's an interesting premise. Again, I'm not going to attack being wealthy in general. That's a thing that's silly to attack. If people are successful in the private sector, in the private world, that's exactly how our system is designed to go. If you have a good idea, you might make a whole bunch of money off of it. But if you wind up working, again, in politics, serving the people, all of that stuff, for as long as you do, and you're worth $160 million at some point, it makes no sense to me. So play that game. If you're someone who passionately defends the other side of the aisle as the good guys and thinks of people like Donald Trump as the horrible, terrible, evil people of the world out there, just look up the net worth of your favorite Democrat. You know, I might even make like a card game of this where you flip it over and you find out the net worth of each Democratic individual, and then also how little work they've ever done in the private sector, or how maybe there's been some, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine, after they get out of the world of politics. But all of this should matter when you're hearing these words from these politicians. Barack Obama said something that was incredible. Incredible because the founding fathers would hate the premise of this statement. The statement being that the right is making the government into the boogeyman, and of course we should trust the government. Of course we should believe in the government. Of course everything the government does has to be in our best interest. Governments are inherently corrupt. They actually are. And so if you say that they're not, you seem to be screaming out loud, stop looking at us, stop looking into the things that demonstrate all of the crap going on. My favorite is probably, and I hate to say it this way, but it's probably the only way to say it, all of the Hunter Biden and Joe Biden stuff that's been coming out now that he's no longer running for the office of president again. I think just the other day, they reported that Hunter Biden, $27 million in money that he made off of his father's name as a politician. The left is not arguing that point. Mainstream media is not arguing that point. Mainstream media is trying to have a stupid win by telling us that the only thing that the Bidens didn't do was give any of this money to Joe Biden, which sounds ridiculous. But they think that that makes him innocent when it should be irrelevant how much money Joe himself put into his own bank account. The stupidity of that couldn't be overstated, by the way. If you chose to do that, I think you would easily understand how easy it would be to get caught. But nonetheless, I digress from that. I'll move on and say that if you can make $27 million for you and your family off of the name of a politician within your family, then Washington is broken. We don't want that to be a way for people to buy influence or even think they're buying influence, even if they didn't actually buy any influence. None of that makes any sense to me. It shouldn't be something that we allow. We also shouldn't allow these politicians to play the stock market when they have insider information that, of course, they have. And when Nancy Pelosi is worth millions and millions of dollars and says, we get to play the stock market too, darn it. There's nothing that makes us different than anyone else. And obviously there is. But here's Barack Obama telling you that the right is the side that's convincing you that the government needs to be put in check, needs to be paid attention to. There's no, you know, reason, I guess, in his mind that we have a checks and balances system where the judicial system and the legislative system have to check the executive branch from time to time, even if they don't do that as well now as they used to. The judicial is better at it these days than the legislative is. But nonetheless, I love that this is the premise of a statement to not only tell you that I'm a good person, my wife's a good person, Kamala is a good person, whatever they say, we're the good guys, but also the government itself is just a really nice good guy that you should stop paying attention to and just trust. That's essentially the statement, and it's terrifying that people actually believe it.
Now, it won't be easy. The other side knows. It's easier to play on people's fears and cynicism, always has been. They will tell you that government is inherently corrupt.
Because
that,
it is.
That sacrifice and generosity are for suckers.
That's not true.
And since the game is rigged, it's okay to take what you want and just look after your own.
Also not true.
That's the easy path. We have a different task. Our job is to convince people that democracy can actually deliver.
Yeah, for you and your family and the $100+ million that you seem to be worth. All of this is, it's so ridiculous. It's so insane. And look, I'll say this again, and it might not be helping me to say this. I guess I don't really care. Dana's back tomorrow. And if you hate anything that I said on the show, I just love the fact that I'm only going to be here for the day. But the Obamas are both good at giving speeches. They are. The speeches themselves, if you wrote them down, if you reviewed them in, say, Speech 101, these people would both get A+ on their report card. They both do a great job. But when you actually dissect the information shared and the narrative that is built, the narrative being that we're the good guys who fight for the little people, whoever they are, and the other side is the bad guys. They love business. They love the elites. They're just horrible, terrible people. The funniest part about it, and this is the part that's missed on many Americans, I don't mean to repeat this as many times as I am, but I'm going to keep repeating it today. The thing that's missed on most Americans is all of these individuals are the elites. It's like when Hollywood lectures us, when Hollywood yells from the rooftops that we need to do better, that we need to do more. When people got so mad at Oprah Winfrey and I think The Rock for trying to ask you for money to help Hawaii or one of the devastating things that happened over the last few years during the pandemic, and people said, I don't have any money. Maybe you guys with the money you have should actually be the ones doing it. I think this would wake up a lot of younger voters. Because older voters probably do know this, what I'm saying. But younger voters might not pay attention to the net worth of all of the individuals that they listen to, that they believe in, that claim that they're essentially reincarnations of Mother Teresa. And when they're not, and when they made all their money in the dirtiness of D.C., you should start to realize how their narrative is built entirely to convince you to vote for them and not at all built in fact. All right, I want to play one last thing, and then I'll take a break. This is a big report that came out today. It broke all over the place. Apparently, and this is, I love this. Last night, Obama is telling you the government's not corrupt. Believe the government. Trust the government. The bad guys are telling you the opposite. And then today it breaks that they made up a whole bunch of jobs that didn't actually exist. This is incredible.
You know, the range of how many jobs they would take away for a variety of reasons, maybe the largest is the birth death model for businesses, was going to be somewhere between 350 and 1,000 and 1 million. It comes in at 818,000.
818,000 jobs just made up, just ones that we said we created that we have to revise down. So we revised it up the first time. Our best guess was that we made about a million more jobs than we actually made. And then whoops-a-daisies, maybe you're not paying attention anymore because the headline breaks and goes viral at first with the big number. And then if the number goes down a little bit, hopefully you're not looking this way anymore. It's hilarious. This is one day, the morning after, we're told by, I guess, the Democratic celebrity versions of politicians that we should trust the government, that the government isn't corrupt, that it doesn't lie to us. And oh yeah, we're caught. We did something literally exactly that we said we wouldn't do the very next day. And they do it all the time, of course. All right, quick break. A lot coming up. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
And our partners that help bring you free radio, Bernegun, the non-firearm firearm, BYRNA is what it's called. There are no waiting periods, no background checks, and it's legal in all 50 states. This is great for restricted areas. Now, I always carry. You know, I like 9mm. There's a lot that I like and a lot that I carry. But the problem is that in some places, I don't have the luxury of just declining to go to some places by the nature of my work where firearms are prohibited. Sometimes I have to go. And I have friends that, you know, work in either New York or D.C., and they find themselves in the same situation. I've had three friends so far get the Byrna SD. That's their most popular model. They've sold like 500,000 of these things. It's also a go-to model for law enforcement because they want to have diverse options for defense. And when you compare this to stun guns, I mean, stun guns are just, you get one or two shots. You have, a five-round capacity with the Byrna SD. It shoots chemical irritant projectiles that can disable threats from up to 50 feet away. And this is, like I said, it's a great option to have when you have outside players trying to limit your options. And it doesn't care about gun-free zone signs. That's what's great about it. It doesn't care about gun-free zone signs. So you have diverse options for self-defense, and you never have to be left defenseless. To learn more about the Byrna gun, BYRNA, visit Byrna.com/Dana and get 10% off your order. Check out all the options at Byrna.com/Dana for 10% off.
From the Egyptian pharaohs all the way to Richard Nixon, what Kamala's plans are dangerous. It is never a good idea to implement price control. It has a proven track record of making matters even worse, and in some cases, end civilizations.
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast.
The Dana Show Podcast, your fast, funny, and informative news companion for those always on the move. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. DanaRadio.com is a great way to stay connected to her, D-Lash or Dana Lash Radio on X, on Twitter, The Dana Show all over the place. All right, let's do a quick five.
and now. All of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
That's right. First on the Quick Five, I thought this was interesting. I feel like some of these studies come out just to make you feel like you don't have to try harder in your life. But a study claims that arts and crafts will boost happiness more than a good job will. I don't believe this to actually be true. And maybe there's some sort of weird solace in like, oh, I'm enjoying arts and crafts right now. But I think a good job probably helps more. But nonetheless, it's out there. It's a study. They're claiming to know these things. So you can believe it if you want. I also saw this in the Wall Street Journal. Teens don't want their license as much as past generations did. This makes absolutely no sense to me. I literally remember the day I got my license and how excited I was, how desperate I was to have it, and all the places I started to go on my own with the beat up junk car that I think was a hand-me-down that I was given, which to me was the best vehicle I'd ever owned in my entire life. A Mazda 323, I think like a 1986 Mazda 323 with a crank sunroof and a lot of broken pieces. That's the first car that I drove, and it was awesome. Again, it was just barely older than I was, or younger than I was at the time that I got it. Anyway, teens don't want to drive. It's changing how they spend money, and I can't make any sort of sense of that at all. Get your license, kids. You're going to love it. You're going to love the freedom of it. I don't know why they don't want freedom. Another thing out there that I saw, Kentucky school changed their bus route. And so kids made up a hip hop song where they got upset that they didn't know where their bus was. I think I have a little bit of this. I think we can try to play it here.
Where my bus is? Where my bus is? I just need a way to school, so where my bus is? Where my bus is?
Yeah, it's just going to keep going for a while. But these little middle school kids objected to their bus route being changed by putting out a song, Where My Bus At. It might actually hit the top 100, which will be very sad for a lot of us, but very amusing for these kids. I'm not sure if it's going to help the school decide to change their mind and fix the bus route, put it back the way it was, but I guess some children don't know how to go to school now, and I'm sure they're not all that upset about it. They're probably pretty happy that they can't get that route. The average person also knows if their day has been ruined at 8:36 a.m. That's one last stat out there that I love. So the next time you're thinking about this and it's just a little after 8 o'clock, you're right if you think that it's a bad day or a good day. All right, quick break. A lot coming up. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
Friends like ReadyWise, not only do they bring you free radio, but look, I'm about to be real with you. I mean, if November, I don't know what's going to happen in November. And if it doesn't go well, you might just want to make sure that you're stocked up. I'm just saying, because, you know, if they do all the green new everything, you're going to see rolling brownouts, blackouts. Heaven forbid, I don't even want to think about political disasters, natural disasters, what the response would be like. So imagine the calm that comes from knowing that whatever happens there, you don't have to worry about getting to the store and dealing with stripped bare shelves or supply chain disasters or, you know, an increase in prices because of crazy inflation, whatever it is, you are prepared to feed your family. And not just like, you know, basic food. I'm talking premium survival food that takes care of all their nutritional needs. And that's where ReadyWise comes in. It's freeze-dried, dehydrated, easy to prepare, just add water, 25-year shelf life. And you know the chain of command for your food, too. It's not coming from a different country. It's all high-quality U.S. ingredients right here, packed in a state-of-the-art U.S. plant shipped out from that same plant. You can visit ReadyWise.com, use promo code Dana20 at checkout, Dana20, and you'll get 20% off any regularly priced item. You can also do a buy one, get one $100 value for $50 of their 72-hour food kit. Two boxes of 12 pouches of premium survival food, so you get your three hots, drinks, all of it, snacks, over 11,000 total calories in each kit. Visit ReadyWise.com, use promo code Dana20 at checkout for 20% off any regularly priced item. It's ReadyWise.com, promo code Dana20 for 20% off.
Keep your finger on the pulse with the Dana Show podcast, delivering timely news with insightful analysis whenever you want, straight to you on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Thrilled to be with you. A bunch of stuff to talk about. As always, you can find Dana everywhere. DanaRadio.com, D-Lash or Dana Lash Radio are great places to find her on X, on Twitter, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, all the things. Check her out. You probably already do because she's ridiculously famous. All right, let's do this. A few different things out there. I mentioned this quickly just a little bit ago, but I'd like to play more audio of it and talk about it a little more. The U.S. jobs report was revised down by almost a million jobs, 818,000. This is insane. This is Fox News and Fox Business covering it. So let's play a little bit of that audio first.
A huge revision down, 818,000 fewer jobs. This is basically the government's overstated the amount of people in the workforce. And even when you look under this, manufacturing was down 115,000 people. So this is a revision down, a significant revision down, the largest in 15 years that we've seen. And it basically says that the government has now overstated the amount of people who are working in this workforce. It shows weakness in the job markets over the past year that we didn't realize was there, but now we know is there. So
okay, it's not that we didn't realize it was there, by the way. I know that's a little silly to say, and he's absolutely right in saying that most of the conversations about the data itself, at least from Democrats, was saying that, hey, even though your experience is bad, even though things have been way too expensive at the grocery store for so long now, gas prices still are terrible, all these things are awful. Actually, the data is telling us we're doing a great job, which fell very hollow on many of our ears, and a lot of us didn't believe it, just simply stating it. And now that you see proof that they've been lying to you and changing things and trying to make the data tell a different story because they know the real story is not a winner for them, well, darn it, now all of a sudden, and even Fox News covers it that way, being like, okay, now we know what's going on. There's another version of this that I can play. It's not the actual state of the economy and the actual state of our individual financial lives. I can also play a piece from CBS News in Minnesota where a cop is literally doing a spot on local news and talking about how there have been a bunch of carjackings and kind of walking a young person and a reporter through how this all works. And there's a carjacking that happens behind them. I don't know how to. So violence and the world in which we live, as far as the safety of it, is just utterly different than it used to be a few years ago. One of the biggest reasons for that is the war against police that Democrats put all over their platform, their political platform, that I think emboldened a whole lot of people who also didn't like the police because, you know, some of these people probably wanted to do things that the police would not want them to do. And I'm not being specific about race or anything. If someone wants to come at me and say, oh, my God, that was a horrible thing you said. Criminals look all kinds of different ways. But nonetheless, I think that they were very happy, the people that do bad things, to hear us say how terrible the cops are. And those people are still doing bad things now. And this happens on television as we're walking through how there's more carjacking.
Sometimes they leave cell phones, receipts. Stolen car.
Kids speeding past the deputies assigned to stopping this very act.
That's insane. Like, oh yeah, that's a stolen car. That's a kid flying around, driving way too fast in a vehicle he shouldn't be in. But here, let me finish this news hit with you so I can get to how other people do this, and then we'll go chase that person down. That's crazy. And so again, if you listen to the narrative and don't actually use your eyeballs, and it's so funny, actually. I'll take a second and say this. The narrative has never been more disconnected from reality than it is right now for politicians. They're so desperate to get people to believe what they're saying, even though people's eyes have been opened quite a bit over the last few years. The pandemic is hopefully, to a lot of people, one of the biggest things that helped open your eyes. But a whole lot of individuals are now seeing what actually goes on and saying to themselves, man, why do these people keep telling us, or at least on one side of the aisle, keep telling us these things that we know aren't true? Am I the idiot? And eventually you're answering the question, no, these people are just lying to you and trying to trick you, and they're getting lazier at it. They just think we're stupider, I believe. I believe that the Democratic Party hopes that most of its voters are incredibly dumb. And there's no other way to say that. I'm not calling you dumb if you vote on that side of the aisle, by the way. I like the fact that Donald Trump has said this in the last month or two, and even Barack Obama said last night that people are inherently Americans. There are a lot of things that tie us together. I believe that. I believe that we all do coach Little League, or we all do care about the elderly neighbor next door if that person's in need of anything. These are things that are true of a lot of us, no matter what side you vote on. However, when the Democratic Party runs on a message that the economy is good, when we have a larger amount of credit card debt than we've ever had in our country, we have people that are definitely not making it with one job and have two or three jobs, when all these things occur and your everyday life screams at you that they're lying to you, for them to keep saying that stuff is just lazy. It's just counting on you to be stupid, to not know what's going on in your own life. Or maybe they're just that disconnected because they don't know. Because as I said a minute ago, and I'll probably say again throughout the show today, they are very wealthy people. These Democratic elites that tell you that they care about the little guy. They're as wealthy, if not wealthier in some ways, than some of the private sector Republicans who they bash. All right, let's play this. This is another Obama moment from the other night. This is a moment that's getting a whole bunch of coverage because it's not exactly a I'll go high when you go low moment. Obama is doing a gesture with his hands when he's talking about Trump and the conversation about crowd sizes and if there's AI crowds or not or whatever all that stuff is that's out there in the world. And Obama does a thing that seems like he's measuring, manhood. There's no other way to say it. Here we go.
This weird obsession with crowd sizes.
I left it there. It's just that one sentence, this weird obsession with crowd sizes, and then the giant applause from this room of course, good people that like to go high when their opponents go low, that hate that Donald Trump is the kind of guy that makes jokes or gives people nicknames or all this stuff. And Obama did a hand gesture thing that would not be a crowd size measurement. It's not something you could do with your hands the way he was doing it. And so, look, I don't know. If you think that's funny, fine. I'm not going to tell you it is or isn't. I don't care. What I am going to say is the hypocrisy of it is just hilarious. To me, that's funnier than the joke itself, is that you can make a reference like that on a stage like that in front of a whole bunch of people who all believe themselves to be nicer than the boogeyman that is the MAGA Republican or whatever they say the terrible people in the world are. All right, some other things out there that I saw that I thought were kind of interesting today. Democrats kicked off their convention with President Biden, of course. All eyes were on Barack Obama last night. One of the biggest questions is, why was Kamala Harris there 2 days ago and not there yesterday? There was no reason for her to leave. There's no reason for the vice president who's running for the office of president, who was going to have nice things said about her, book it for a day. And I think she had some other event that she held as far as a campaign moment. You could definitely do that after the convention. A lot of people believe that this is the deep division within the Democratic Party itself on full display. And that's interesting to me. So the first night of the DNC, Biden was supposed to be the hero of all of it. He's supposed to be the guy that gets praised. It's actually kind of hilarious and sort of gross and disgusting. It's probably both of those things. Because the chance at the end of the night, which came after the primetime moment where Biden was scheduled to speak, we love you, Joe, we love you, Joe, have to actually hurt if you're the guy who just got forced out by the party because you didn't think that he would win this election. Hearing people chant, we love you, Joe, but we don't really love you that much, would have been more honest. So that version of we love you probably felt a little cheap and a little whatever. But Kamala needing to be there in front of Joe Biden, actually taking the stage, which she was not intent to do, not planned to do, but very quickly did in the middle of the show for just a few minutes, that seemed obsessive. That seemed like the kind of person who wants the spotlight on them now. I want it on me right now, and I don't want it to shine on anyone else. And so on that Monday, since you think that you're already bigger than the current president of the United States because you've essentially created the coup to take his nomination away from him and had Nancy Pelosi and everyone else help you with that, then on night two, when you definitely won't be the celebrity in the room compared to the Obamas, you just leave. It's so odd. It's petty, in all honesty. At least that's my outside perception of it. And I think you might see a whole lot more of this. And here's the last thing I guess I'd say about the Kamala Harris angle, which is not getting talked about a whole lot after yesterday. The Obamas are the discussion. They said things about Kamala Harris, but no one really cares about that loves that political side or those political celebrities or whatever you want to call the Obamas. They just really care about them. So all the cheers, all the applause, the whole night was about them. And so the other thing that I think is very interesting as you watch the rise or whatever you want to call it of Kamala is when she actually has to do this herself. She has still not earned anything she's gotten. And I know people say that's horrible. I think Michelle Obama last night said that she's the most qualified person. This is hilarious. I don't know if I can finish the sentence. To ever seek the office of president. I guess more qualified than any of the founding fathers who built our country, according to Michelle Obama. Kamala Harris deserves to be on Mount Rushmore before she's even won an election, which is incredible. But nonetheless, as I say this, what I think is so important about the differences is that Kamala can't deliver a speech like the Bidens delivered last night. She can't. She's not good at it. She will say things that make no sense. Not the way that Biden does, where it's just literal gibberish, but she'll say things that are wrapped in crazy circles because she's trying not to say anything and thinks she's being intelligent. She's like Yoda. If Yoda was even crazier to understand, I thought of a thing to say, and then I don't want to make the Star Wars kids mad, but I'll just say it. She's like a high version of Yoda. If Yoda were on pot, if Yoda were smoking every day, and then saying things into the microphone, that's Kamala Harris. I actually also often call her a drunk fortune cookie because she can't be in her right mind. It's got to be something that's going on there, at least if you read the words. But some version of that, she'll speak in these odd things that sort of sound like they might be intelligent, but really they're not at all because she said nothing. And so that'll be her speech on Thursday. It won't go down in the history books as one of the best ones ever given, and she knows it. And the Democratic Party knows it. And the reason they've been hiding her, the reason she's not giving answers to reporters on a daily basis the way that Trump does, is because she's not good at that either. She's really not good at very many of these things. And the reason that we know this, if you've been paying attention, is how failed her candidacy was in 2020 when she tried to actually win something for real and not just be handed it, but actually be a person who defeats other people in a contest. For this type of role, she got almost no votes and wound up ending her presidential campaign in 2020 very early on in the primary process. I was not the person that people thought she was going to be, even after the first debate. She got some genuinely good coverage after the first debate, and then the second debate didn't go as well, and then all of a sudden she had disappeared from the radar of many voters. And now she's sort of being forced on you, and anybody that thinks, oh, this is great, just wait. Just wait till she actually has to do some of the things to earn the position that the Democratic Party is trying to hand her, because those won't go well. Again, Harris has also defended her price control stance that she recently rolled out there, saying that's the best way to save all of us money, which is insane because it's literally just saying that the government can now decide how businesses run their business, which would be incredibly bad for our society if that happens, because businesses won't just willingly lose money. No matter what rules you make, somehow, some way, they'll either make money or they'll stop operating their business. Those are the only two options for people that do this well. All right, quick break. A lot more coming up. Greg Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
Folks who bring you free radio, it's our friends over at Patriot Mobile, the only Christian conservative cell phone service that's out there. And Patriot Mobile wants to save you money. In fact, they're going to save you a lot of money when you make the switch. And you can get free activation using code Dana. And see, with Patriot Mobile, you are supporting U.S.-based jobs. They have 100% U.S.-based customer service team. They make it easy to switch. And you're going to get the best service without funding the left. They have nationwide coverage in all three major networks. And when you switch to them, you're not putting money in the pockets of all the things, the issues and candidates that you vote against every time you're at the ballot box. Because Patriot Mobile makes sure that the momentum goes behind the things you support. Make sure you use code Dana for that free activation. And when you visit, again, you can get a free month when you use offer code Dana and free activation. So visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and get a free month of service with offer code Dana. Don't be fooled by pretenders who act like they share your values. They don't. And they act like they have the same coverage. They don't. Switch to PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT for your free month of service today.
Get the lowdown on the latest news with a side of laughs whenever you want. Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is the Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Thrilled to be with you. Bunch of stuff to talk about, as always. I do love this. Someone went on Reddit and created a thread that a whole bunch of people have now outed themselves for all kinds of things we don't understand. But the question was, what is something that no matter how many times it's explained to you, you still don't understand how it works? Number one answer, space. Most people are like, yeah, I don't get it. Whatever you're saying to me, however that whole thing is designed, I'm not sure. And you can tell me a bunch of times, but I'm here right now. I'm not in space, so I don't understand. Number two was magnets. I kind of love that one. One person actually wrote that I have resigned myself to accept the fact that I think magnets are magic, and that's all there is to it. There's no other way to describe it. Electricity came in at number three. Quantum mechanics came in at number four. That is too low for that thing. That is much harder to understand than the other stuff on this list. Quantum mechanics should be higher. And then number five, the stock market. I thought that was interesting, too. If you ever wanted to learn how to play the stock market, and granted, this is not a good version. I don't think some of the celebrity people in the world of financial advice would back this, but I'm going to do it. Just download one of those apps where you can play it for free, but it actually uses real information. That means you're buying stocks, but it's not with real money. And then you're selling stocks, but again, it's not with real money, but it follows the actual market every day. And if, say, 6 months or a year from now, you're winning in the world of this fake money, and there's apps that let you do this, then go ahead and invest some real money and go ahead and do the same stuff. They let you research the stocks. They let you do all that. And then eventually you can still play it however you want. You can be a day trader with all the different, you know, retail apps that are out there. But that's my recommendation. If you don't understand the stock market, get your hands a little dirty, then maybe read some stuff about it. But don't do it with real money. At least that's what I'm telling you not to do. You can do it if you want to. But if you lose that money, it's on you, not on me. One other thing that I saw out there that I loved. This was a question that popped up a few places online. I think Mental Floss is one of the places that talked about it. Why do so many cartoon characters have four fingers and not five? Why is that? The answer might surprise you. It's not because artists can't draw five fingers, which is what some might guess. It's actually to save money on animation. Apparently, the amount of money you pay to animate the digits of a hand is higher than just you know, some of the other stuff in the episode. So let's cut out one of those digits. Let's have it not move around as much. That's the reason for four fingers. Plus, as most of us know, you probably don't need all five. The pinky could go away and you could probably still survive. I shouldn't have said that. I'm probably wrong. All right, quick break. A lot coming up. Craig filling in on The Dana Show.
I agree with Annie Oakley, who said, quote, "I would like to see every woman know how to handle guns as naturally as they know how to handle babies." Now, I myself regularly conceal carry a 9mm. Now, that said, not every woman is like me, has had the hours of training that I've had, or feels comfortable around firearms due to years of use, or maybe they're by a gun-free zone. I'd like to change that, what I can, while encouraging self-defense at the same time. So this is where Byrna comes in. It's kind of like a starter weapon. They make a non-firearm firearm. I like the idea of incredible force sending chemical irritants towards a threat as an additional option for women. And the Byrna SD model shoots chemical irritant projectiles, 68 caliber rounds that can deter threats in their tracks up to 50 feet away. I mean, it is hard. Easy target acquisition, zero recoil. Byrna is legal in all 50 states. There's no background checks, no permits required. It's shipped directly to your door. Gun-free isn't applicable to Byrna. It's great for wherever guns are banned. Visit Byrna.com/Dana for 10% off. That's BYRNA.com/Dana.
That's right. This is The Dana Show. Darn it, we'd love for you to bring back jobs, not just fake makeup jobs like they did, about a million of them, 800 and something thousand. I'm Craig Collins filling in. D Lash or Dana Lash Radio, great places to stay connected to her on Twitter, on X, all kinds of other places. Listen live 12 to 3 on the Odyssey app. See Dana on YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, DirecTV, Channel 347, everywhere, the first TV. All right, let's do some stuff. Alvin Bragg has admitted that his case has fallen apart after the Supreme Court has decided that Donald Trump does, in fact, enjoy some immunity when he's in the office of President of the United States. So the Manhattan District Attorney said that he would not contest Donald Trump's and his legal team's request to delay any sort of sentencing till after the September date, September 18th, I think, that it was originally scheduled. This is a big deal. The judge, who oftentimes seemed to not give a crap at all about trying to seem impartial, about trying to seem like he wasn't also after Donald Trump in some way, shape, or form, does get to make his own decision on this sort of thing. But Alvin Bragg said that they're not going to contest it. And it's right for them not to do that, because if you look into all the different pieces of information that were presented as proof of whatever the crimes are that Bragg is saying Trump committed, and especially, and this is most important, the thing that turned a misdemeanor case into a felony case that allows people to say convicted felon when they talk about Trump, a whole lot of that might fall under what is immunity in the world of the Supreme Court. So it might have to get thrown out. I will remind everyone that that case out of Manhattan was always thought to be by far the weakest against Donald Trump. And this were people that were on the left that said it. I think I've played montages before of like CNN, MSNBC, and the like, having their legal analysts admit that a whole lot of this made no sense. I think even a couple of those people said that when they looked at the case, it was even worse than they thought it was going to be, because it took a lot of crazy legalese to turn what should be a misdemeanor, a charge that I'm not even saying Trump is guilty of, but should actually be a misdemeanor, into like 50-something or 30-something felony, 34 felony counts, if I'm trying to be exact about it. Nonetheless, this is a big deal. I think it's going to have a lasting impact, and Trump will wind up not being a convicted felon because that case is going to wind up going away because it's not really built on anything credible in the first place, and that will matter, even though it won't stop Democrats from saying it. Also, and I just thought this was interesting, I can just throw this out there quickly. RFK Jr. apparently is considering, and he's told his running mate, that he might endorse Trump. Now, granted, this comes on the heels of news that he was considering having a conversation with Kamala Harris and her campaign. He's said a couple times, I think himself on social media, that he's willing to have a conversation with anyone as long as it furthers the goals that he has for whoever is in office for the next administration. I am genuinely curious if RFK Jr. would help Trump. What I mean by that is I do believe that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. running a race on his own, trying to be the next president, hurts Kamala Harris more than it hurts Trump. Because if you actually look at a whole bunch of the things that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. would want to do, there are a lot of Democratic things in there. There are not a lot of conservative Republican ideas. There's a lot of honesty in some of the conversations he has and some of the things he talks about, whether it's vaccines or whatever, that does not exist in the Democratic Party. But he's kind of an old school Democrat, the way that they used to be, the way that, say, his family is pretty famous for being. And what's sad about it is that in today's world, a tried and true, you know, basic version of a middle of the road Democrat would now be easily considered to be a somewhat right conservative, if not far right conservative on some of these things. But nonetheless, Kennedy could find a place, I assume, in a Trump administration. And endorsing Trump might help. I don't really know. There is 4 or 5%, whatever, in any poll that's going with Kennedy. So would they all follow him in whatever campaign he endorsed? That's a good question. I'm not sure if that would happen. But that would be the only reason that Trump would even consider it, is that if he gained all of the support from Kennedy, he would be even further ahead of Harris than he was ahead of Biden. And one thing, actually, just quickly about the polls. I do love something that I see out there a lot, and I could probably play audio on this. I probably should, but we'll figure it out a little bit later. Maybe we will. But nonetheless, I love the fact that a whole bunch of Democrats are saying that Republicans simply don't believe the data. They don't believe the polls, and that's terrible. And essentially, we're idiots if you say that. Two things. The first thing, Trump has always outperformed his polls. He's always done it. He did it in 2020. He did it in 2016. He always polls worse than how he actually does in an election. There were states where Biden was winning by 8-9 points in 2020, where he barely squeaked by a victory. And I'm sure a whole lot of people don't think he won at all in those places. But nonetheless, there's a whole lot of places where the polling was utterly wrong. So if you're running neck and neck with a Donald Trump in the polls, you should be afraid that you're actually not winning at all when Election Day comes. And so I think that that's a big part of the discussion in the first place in a lot of those polls. And I think that's one of the bigger reasons that some of the Democrats last night said, we don't want to be tied. We want to be well ahead. And actually, Trump leading Biden by what he was leading him by was the first time that a Republican candidate was ahead of a Democrat in quite some time in the polling. The polling seems to have sort of a innate bias that leans Democratic. Man, I can't figure out how that works. I can't figure out how certain places or certain, you know, news organizations might lean that way. Another thing out there, moving on, I thought this was pretty interesting. Planned Parenthood has set up a truck outside the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois, and the truck is offering free vasectomies and abortions inside of a mobile truck outside of a Democratic National Convention. And some of the words on the sign say, I love someone who had an abortion justice now, whatever they are. but it actually allows people to walk up, go inside the truck, and have a procedure performed for them. Now, I don't understand something, and I'm not going to dive deep into the abortion discussion. I don't think it's relevant, and the reason why I don't think it's relevant is Donald Trump has said he's not after the thing that Democrats say he's after. Donald Trump says he'll let the states continue to decide if abortion is right for each individual state. And if you get mad at something, if your state has a rule that you don't agree with, then vote and vote for the other side and try to change the rule, whatever the rule is in your state, to be something different. And actually realize that you have a better shot at a state level than a national level of voting something in and out of practice. And of course, if the Supreme Court isn't creating a rule that we all have to follow. So I do think states having the right is smart. And I do think when Trump says that that is beautiful, not that he says other things are beautiful, and that's an attack that's lobbed at him, that he means that it's sort of exactly what the founding fathers envisioned, that states have a lot of power in a lot of important issues. This would be one of them. But nonetheless, I wonder how many Americans are truly happy at the idea of a mobile abortion clinic just riding around your town, your city, or outside the Democratic National Convention discussing this. I think that this is something that's deeply personal if you even decide to do it. And if you're in a state where it's legal, I'm a Catholic, by the way, if you need to really understand my position on some of those things, you can probably figure it out now. But nonetheless, I don't know why it's essentially now the same as, say, a taco truck or a pizza truck. I wasn't trying to make a crude joke there. Just the first taco idea that came to mind is a truck there. But any of them, whatever they are, these things just don't seem to need to be this ubiquitous, this out in the open, this celebrated. It seems wrong to celebrate something like this. And I don't think it's something that people actually would feel celebratory about or should feel celebratory about. And that's just my opinion, but it's very odd. They set up this outside of the DNC, and some are praising it and talking about how this is one of the core issues that needs to be discussed on a national scale. And again, just to remind you, two quick things for anyone out there that doesn't know this, although I imagine a lot of people listening to this show do understand this. Trump did not ban abortion. The states are now individually in control of the rules there, as evidenced by the fact that a whole lot of states still allow it. So anyone that says that Trump banned it is, well, just lying to lie. And then second, no matter how much this issue changes and ebbs and flows or evolves over time, I don't know that we should ever be at the point as a society where we're so happy about something that we have a mobile truck sitting outside any place that's performing a procedure like this. That does seem wrong, at least to me. All right. One other thing I did want to play. I thought this was interesting. This is CNN and some of their discussion, their coverage of the Obamas and the impact they have, the celebrity status that they have in the world of politics, and saying that they didn't realize I had been in a spiritual desert until the Obamas created the oasis that was on stage. That's a real sentence that's going to be spoken here. And it's sort of amazing, the heaps and heaps of ridiculous praise that go out into the world when talking about some of these politicians. I love this. And actually, I also love a stat that says that Harris has gotten 80-something percent positive news coverage since she announced that she's stealing the nomination that she didn't win. And Trump has gotten 90-plus percent negative news coverage, even though, remember, this is a person who survived an assassination attempt and pumped his fist in the air and said fight in response to someone trying to kill him, who got way too close to him, who had way too easy of a shot at him, and miraculously he turned his head and survived. For news media to not be giving more, fair or at least somewhat positive coverage of a political candidate who had something like that happen to them is screaming at you how much they hate the guy. But here, let's play a little bit of CNN and how much they celebrate the Obamas, or at least celebrated them last night.
It was rather remarkable. I didn't know how much I missed them. I missed them. I missed that. I miss hearing that.
Uh-huh.
Biden did something important last night, and he transferred the machinery of the party to Kamala Harris. The Obamas renewed the magic of the movement. That's what they were transferring. And they did it beautifully. They did it powerfully.
Yes.
Obama used nostalgia
oh my
in
gosh.
A beautiful way. He didn't say, make America great again, we're going to go back. He reminded everybody of the best things about our families, about our neighborhoods. That was...
He changed me. He changed you. He changed all of us. He's an incredible person. Here's the person who hates this most, by the way. Kamala Harris. Because she can't do that. She is incapable, and she will prove it on Thursday, I'm positive about it, of giving a speech quite like the ones the Obamas gave. Now, granted, a whole lot of people can't give speeches like the ones the Obamas gave, and I'm not trying to overly praise them. A whole bunch of what they said is ridiculous lies. And even more so when they talk about how poor they were growing up, you just have to Google their net worth now and their house that they own to realize how different their lives are today and how much them hating the elite and claiming that the elite don't care about you, the elite being the Trumps of the world, seems to really fit the description of who they are right now in their lives, or at least how they live their lives. I love that Barack Obama said something about a leaf blower, because if he has a neighbor even remotely close to him, and you can't really see it on the compound when you take a screenshot of his house from the Google Earth image, if he has one, he wouldn't hear the leaf blower even if the guy was blasting it every day at the corner of his property. But I digress. As you hear these things, as you discuss these things, the person who hates this most is Kamala Harris because she literally can't do it. And Bill Clinton will speak tonight. I have a buddy of mine who's a pretty hardcore conservative, lover of Trump, if that makes him MAGA or not. I don't even understand what that is in these days, because a whole bunch of Republicans who don't love Trump will easily punch a Trump ticket and not think twice about it because they think his policies are much better than the policies of the other side. But Clinton will speak tonight, and Clinton also has a way with words. My buddy seems to think he's the kind of guy that could sell sand in the desert. So he might do well. And then Harris will speak tomorrow and be the worst speech of the group, minus maybe some of the flubs of our current president. And that'll scream something else to you when it happens. All right, quick break, a lot more. It's Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
Hey, dudes, listen up. I have a gift idea that could truly impress the lady in your life and transform your home into a much-needed sanctuary, all with the luxurious comfort of Cozy Earth. It's called Cozy Earth. She'll be impressed. And Cozy Earth uses only the finest fabrics and textiles, making their products super soft and comfortable. So, for example, you could give the gift of comfort and support with Cozy Earth's durable weave bedsheet fabric that keeps your bedsheet smooth and luxurious for years. And you can say goodbye to pilling also. With a 10-year guarantee, these sheets are super comfortable. It's a long-lasting investment. And ladies, you don't have to wait for somebody to get this for you. You can create your own comfort and sanctuary with Cozy Earth's best-selling bamboo sheet set made from 100% premium viscose. It's very luxurious. So we just got our sheets. That's their California king size. And they had our color, which was Harbor Mist. That's the one I picked out. So I love the selection. I love how easy it is to navigate their website and find what you want. So if you want to make every bedroom a sanctuary, do it with Cozy Earth. Breathable, ultra soft, and even softer with every wash. Try them risk-free today for 100 nights and love them or get a full refund. And that's one of the best money-back guarantees in the business. So your beds, Colin, and answer with the ultimate in comfort and get up to 40% off only at CozyEarth.com/Dana using code Dana. And don't forget, tell them I sent you in the post-purchase survey and you can get some free socks. That's CozyEarth.com/Dana and use code Dana to get up to 40% off.
Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast, because who says you can't make fun of people while staying informed on your own personal time? Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is the Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Let's do a quick five.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's quick five.
Yeah, here we go. First, I love this one. I'm going to actually play some audio for it. This is a guy. He's a hero to women everywhere, or at least he thinks he is. Because he calls up some place in Austin, Texas, and complains that they don't have a women's bathroom. They do, in fact, have a women's bathroom, by the way. They got a men's room, they have a family bathroom, they have a women's room. His friend just didn't find it. And so then his female friend, or at least that's his claim, complained to him about it, and he decided to call and let this business know what he thinks. Again, they actually have the thing that he's claiming they need to have.
Hey, listen, I was just wondering, this is a voicemail, right? I'm being recorded. I was just wondering if there's a ladies' room at your establishment. Because I had a friend go there, and she felt so uncomfortable how there's men's room, and then there's family room, yet there's no ladies' room. It's not a welcoming environment. And what, are you trying to play off the stereotype that video games are just for men? You realize women are smarter than males? They would completely dominate in video games if they took the time to care. You're pretty... for
yeah.
You know that. Quit being weirdos. Out of the ladies' room. All right? I'm not playing around.
See, there we go. This video gamer is making sure that all women everywhere know he's standing up for them. Again, the place that he's calling and complaining has, in fact, a women's room that is just for ladies, and maybe not that many people go there because it sounds like the place is full of dudes. But nonetheless, I love that. Some other quick stories out there. U.S. births continue to fall, dropping 17% since 2007. And then finally, there's a recall on a bunch of Ford vehicles because the windows can pinch. That sounds bad, but at least they're not bursting into flames like some other cars that get recalled at times. All right, that's some of the quick five. A lot more coming up on the show. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show. You can check her out everywhere. She's on social media, D-Lash or Dana Lash Radio on X on Twitter. You can find her on TV. You can find her on Facebook, YouTube, all the places. Excellent social media. Done by our very own Steven, which she does very well. And by Dana, of course, too. Quick break, a lot more in a bit.
I love Black Rifle Coffee. I will not drink anything else. Like, when I travel, I try to actually take some with me. When we went on vacation, I literally took some with me. And because I can't stand, everybody else's coffee is just garbage. When you drink the best coffee out there, you cannot drink anything else. And Black Rifle Coffee has the best beans, the finest coffee beans from award-winning farms worldwide, explosive roast profiles. Now, you might think all this fancy sounding stuff might make it super expensive. It's not. It's veteran-owned, veteran-run. These are average, everyday people. They've dedicated their mission to their mission of making great coffee, but they also support veteran and first responder causes. And this is evident, everything in the way that they approach their business to their bag art, it all pays homage to it. Now, you can join the coffee club, which is what I've done, because I hate running out of coffee and I go through a lot of it. You join the coffee club, you choose what roast you want, your frequency of shipment, and it's sent to your doorstep with free shipping. You're never going to run out of premium coffee. You love America, and that's who they want to help. Make sure that they have, make sure you have the best coffee out there. BlackRifleCoffee.com. Join the coffee club. When you go to the website, make a purchase, you're going to save 20% with code Dana. They also have ground whole bean K-cups, ready to drink, apparel, kettles, grinders, mugs, and more. BlackRifleCoffee.com. Order today. Get 20% off using code Dana. Only at BlackRifleCoffee.com.
On the go and need a quick news fix with a fun twist? Follow Dana's Absurd Truth Podcast for bite-sized, informative episodes perfect for your busy schedule on Apple or wherever you get your podcast.
This is The Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. Thrilled to be with you. Find Dana Lash all over the place. Incredibly successful person in the world of radio. D-Lash, Dana Lash Radio. The Dana Show is available on television, DirecTV 347, all the places, and DanaRadio.com too. All right, let's do this. First, I thought it was interesting. This is just a quickie. Democratic Senator Bob Menendez has finally resigned, deciding that he probably won't be able to defeat any sort of, push against him now that he's been found guilty of bribery and all kinds of other things. Gold bars literally found in his house. I love how long this guy tried to resist going away, because it shows how arrogant a whole bunch of Democratic politicians can be, that Menendez is like, this isn't going to be a big deal. I can survive them finding gold bars and a bunch of cash inside coats in my home. That won't hurt me that bad. Then he tried to blame his wife for all the problems, and now eventually he's going away. But this, to me, is the obvious end result of something. Of course, as I say that, I'm aware that there's also new information about just how deep the financial problem is for the Bidens, how much money Hunter Biden made, $27 million+ off of the name of his dad, and gave it to all family members outside of Joe. Which is why mainstream media claims Joe Biden still did nothing wrong, which is insane. President Biden obviously would have been, or at least should have been, knowledgeable. Actually, you know what? I've said this before. I'll say it again. It's been a while since I said this. If our president was unaware that his son and family members made $27 million off of his name, their connection to him, and even had him on a bunch of conference calls, because that's something that they admit happened, where Hunter would call his dad, put him on speaker, and have Joe Biden talk to whoever these business people are from other countries that Hunter wanted to do business with. If it never dawned on him that this might be a bunch of money making off of his name, he is the stupidest person that's ever been in charge of our country, something people probably already believe is true, and does not deserve to have another day in charge of the country. Or he made money and he's lying and all that other stuff. But either way, it's not good for the guy. But darn it, he's not going anywhere. Even though people are saying that he could easily be impeached with a few months left, I don't know what win that actually is there, other than actually people being held accountable for the bad things they do. So maybe I'm good with that. All right, let's play this. Michelle Obama said something last night that was incredible. Actually, Barack Obama said a few incredible things, too. One of the things Barack said was about how you should inherently trust the government, that it's bad that the Republicans talk about how, you know, corrupt it is and how it's the boogeyman and you shouldn't trust it, even though governments are inherently corrupt. That's a thing that happens. And why the founding fathers built our country so specifically, so uniquely, you know, full of checks and balances so that no one could be a king. No one could rule with an iron fist, something that I think the Obamas would very much love to do. Michelle Obama actually said something about how you can't change the rules and win in life. You're not allowed to cheat. Only the elites, and she's talking about Trump here, are allowed to do whatever they want and still win. It is amazing to hear her say this, and I'll play it in a second, because even the people who don't go full election, you know, interference, stolen, whatever in 2020, even the people who just say, you know, a lot of those rules changed real late in the game and COVID was the reason why, and you allowed mail-in ballot voting in places that did not really develop a system that was reliable or intelligent for the amount of mail-in votes that they got. You just kind of skirted a lot of rules. State legislatures weren't involved in changing the rules. Governors just decided to do stuff they really didn't have the power to do. All of this is crazy. All of this is amazing. But then Michelle goes on stage and says, we're not allowed to do this. We're not allowed to do the thing that we definitely did in the last election.
Benefit from the affirmative action of generational wealth.
By the way, she's worth over $160 million. She will only benefit from building wealth off of the backs of Americans by building those wealths through the public sector, not the private sector. She builds it by literally taking our tax dollars and giving them to herself. Continue.
If we bankrupt a business, or choke in a crisis, we don't get a second, third, or fourth chance. If things don't go our way, we don't have the luxury of whining or cheating others to get further ahead. No.
We don't. No way.
We don't get to change the rules so we always win.
Okay.
If we see a mountain in front of us, we don't expect there to be an escalator waiting to take us to the top.
No way. We can't do any of those things, except we knew that disproportionately people who would vote by mail would vote for us. And we changed the rules in pretty much every state and used the excuse of the pandemic to be the reason we did that so that we could get more votes. They said, remember this, and this is something that I guess Michelle is choosing to forget, that you wouldn't know the winner on election day in 2020, because all the mail-in votes would probably go the other way than the in-person votes would. And so that's why you change the rules to allow for so many mail-in votes and probably change the rules in kind of illegal ways, because you cut out people that are supposed to be involved in those decisions in some of these states. I live in Illinois. That's one place where the governor, Governor Pritzker, who also spoke the other day and said some weird stuff himself, just changed a lot of rules on his own. I didn't go through his state government, which is not something he's supposed to do. But I digress. Another thing out there that I kind of liked, this is interesting. CNN has its panel talk about stuff. Van Jones was overly praising the Obamas and how amazing they are and how much he misses them, which is interesting because Kamala Harris won't be able to get the same level of support in at least the way in which she delivers a speech. But here's another moment from CNN that I thought was pretty valuable to so many of us. Here we go.
In all these speeches, as good as they were, is that she's in the White House right now. Democrats have controlled the White House for 12 of the last 16 years.
Right.
And for all of the talk about division and the problems in the country and people are hurting, Democrats have mostly controlled this country.
Uh-huh.
Trump had it for four. The Obamas and Biden had it for the rest of the time. And somehow, it's still all Trump's fault, and somehow she hasn't been at the center of it. So to me, that's still the glaring hole in this campaign
that
hasn't yet been solved at the convention.
No, it hasn't been solved at the convention, because they're also crediting Harris every time they talk about the Biden and Harris administration in a beneficial way. Anything they say they do, any bill that they got passed, any legislation. And again, this is something that Biden would hang his hat on and say is the reason why you should think of him as a good president. He got things done, at least according to him. Not that many of the things he got done actually were done very well. There were a whole lot of mistakes there. But now apparently they're Harris things too. But if it's anything bad, anything negative, the economy itself, Harris the other day complaining about the prices of stuff, which is amazing to listen to her say, because you're in the White House now. And if Biden has been shoved to the corner as much as he has been, you think you have even more power now than you had before. But nonetheless, it's just sort of amazing to hear those things stated in that kind of conversation, as if she's both in power and not in power, depending on what the discussion is. And I think that's one of the other big reasons that she also skipped last night, is that the Obamas were there to talk about all the great job they did when they were in office, and how much the Democratic Party loves them. Even if they didn't really do that great of a job while in office, as demonstrated by that point just made there, that if things are bad, if division exists, you know what? I'll say this too. One of my other favorite narratives that exists in politics and is all over the DNC for the first two nights, and probably will be again tonight and will be again tomorrow, is that there's division in our country. Now, they say there isn't at times, and Obama even said there wasn't, that we're all actually Americans, we're all connected, but they say there's division. And yet they take no responsibility for developing that division. You have people like President Biden saying that MAGA Republicans are horrible, terrible people. Essentially, they're a threat to society itself. That January 6th and all the supporters of Trump are going to upend democracy as we know it. They're going to ruin everything. They're going to riot. They're going to kill people. Whatever it is, they say, whatever the boogeyman might be. And then they go on a microphone and they're like, and by the way, there's a lot of division and we don't understand it. I've told this story before. I'm going to tell it again here. I don't know if I've ever told it, filling in on Dana's show, but it's one of the more amazing moments in my own personal career where I realized just how insane someone on the left can be. So I was working at a radio station that wasn't exactly politically on one side. They said they were in the middle, but all the shows were allowed to say whatever they wanted. I did my show my way, and some of the other shows I worked with did shows differently and didn't like some of the stuff I said on the radio. It was not exactly a fun time to be at a radio station where there was that much weird division within the talent themselves. And this was a while ago for anyone that has heard me in more recent places. But nonetheless, I fill in on a show with a different host, a host I didn't work with before, who was also our news person at the time. She was the news director and a co-host of a morning show. And right before the show starts, and this is right at the beginning of the pandemic when a whole lot of people, especially on the left, were terrified that if you got COVID, you would definitely die. But this person tells me, like, the bump song is playing. We're getting ready to start the first hour, the first segment of a morning show that I wake up early for. And she says, oh, by the way, just so you know, if I were to get COVID, I would find the closest Trump rally so I could give it to them and kill as many of them as possible. And she said it in this weird, I'm kind of joking, but I'm really not way, and sort of smiled at me as she said it. And then I had to start talking because the music ended. And the whole first segment, the back of my brain is like, holy crap, that was insane. But I shouldn't talk about it. I should have outed her, actually, but I tried to be nice. They were my coworkers. I didn't change my opinion, by the way. Her attempt to silence me failed, even though she said she was going to kill people. But I can't tell you the amount of liberal people that I've either worked with or know who have a similar sentiment, that they think that the opposite side of the aisle, the people who support Donald Trump or are willing to vote for him, even if they don't love everything he's ever said or done in his life, whatever it might be, are evil. They're terrible. They're racist. They're sexist. They're the worst of the worst in our society, and they deserve to be handled with vitriol. They deserve to be handled with screaming and yelling. This is something that a lot of Democrats believe. A lot of that room of people, when they hear division, what they hear, in my opinion, is we're all the rational, sane people. And that other side of the aisle, the side that's voting for Trump, those people are terrible. And if they could just be smart like us and vote for our side, then we'd like them. But if they don't, then we're going to keep hating them. Division isn't fixed. Now, this is a weird thing to get up on a soapbox and say, but I'm going to say it, darn it. Division isn't fixed by having a uniform opinion. That doesn't fix the world we live in. That's what they preach. That's what Democrats want. They want everyone to believe the same thing, to be comfortable in a room because they all say the same thing. Division is actually fixed by accepting the differences in others, accepting that the opinion on the other side does exist. It exists probably more prominently than you want it to. And the best way to discuss it is to actually talk about it and not try to silence it. But that's something they don't care about. More than half the country votes a certain way in elections in which people decide who wins the White House and who doesn't. And if the conservative wins, I know the Electoral College makes my point a little less perfect. But nonetheless, the way in which it works is one side wins, one side loses. And I don't know why Democrats ignore that, because Trump won in 2016. Many people believe he won in 2020. He got the most votes of any sitting president in the history of the country. Even if I don't go the whole, did there, you know, was there cheating or not? And yet most Democrats will act like 5 out of 100 people are actually Trump supporters or MAGA supporters. And that's so inherently flawed. And the best way to fix division is to accept that someone doesn't think like you and it doesn't make them an evil pile of crap. And honestly, I've said this a bunch before, and sometimes I get attacked on my social media for saying it, but I don't care. Bring it all over again if you want to. I think that the narrative within the Republican Party, within the conservative party, is that Democrats are kind of dumb. Democrat supporters are not as smart as conservatives. It's not nice to think that, but it's not evil. You think to yourself, well, you're naive. You want things that can't happen, or you want things that would cost so much money that they'd cause more good or they'd cause more bad than good, whatever it might be. But this is the conversation I have a lot when you talk to a conservative about supporters of the other side, is that they think that there's something that they're not seeing that they should see that would open their eyes and make them vote a different way. It's the old, if you have a heart, you vote Democrat when you're younger, and if you have a brain, you vote conservative when you get older. Now, conservatives, according to Democrats, are Satan. I don't know how to say that differently. They're evil incarnate. They're sexist, racist, whatever they might be. They're something horrible. And that's a through line. That's the whole, I don't understand how people can vote for Donald Trump because they must be as horrible as I think he is. And I think that's very interesting. The core statement, the core thing that you preach to your side of the aisle is going to influence how, say, divisive they are with the other side. Democrats saying that the other side is evil is more divisive than Republicans saying the other side doesn't see all of the truth. Quick break, a lot more. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
Our partners that help bring you free radio, Kel-Tec, the P15, lightest, thinnest 9mm on the market, double stack mag, ships with two of them. You got a 15 round and a 12 round capacity. The 15 you're not losing any of that stopping power. You're not losing any capacity either. It has a minimal pinky extension on that. And then the 12 round is flush fit, double stack mag, holds 12. These are standard capacity magazines. There's a metal version and a polymer version. I have both. Love the metal version because it has the wood panel, that walnut panel, textured grips, true classic look and feel. Polymer version's also great. Super lightweight, lifetime warranty, compact and ideal for concealed carry self-defense. And it's from the inventors of the micro compact pistol category. So you have to check it out. Quality made right here in the US of A by a company that shares your values. All American story. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec. Learn more about the P15 at KelTecWeapons.com. That's KelTecWeapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
This is the Craig Collins version of the Dana Show. I am filling in today, and we are definitely doing Florida Man, as she does every single day on this program. I love this. This is a 55-year-old guy out of Florida who had a unique way to try to create a side hustle during all the challenging times that we're all living in. He put up flyers at all kinds of hotels pretending to be a real pizza place, a Roman's Pizzeria. But he's not. He's just some other dude who put up a flyer with his phone number. People would call him to order from Roman's. He would make a frozen pizza and deliver it, and eventually got caught doing this. This is crazy. Here is the real owner of Roman's Pizza. His name is Jesus Roman, talking about how somebody was stealing his business name and giving it horrible, terrible press because of how bad the pizzas were.
Bad, uncooked. Sometimes they said in the box, a piece of raw dough. And they just give it to them, and they just, by the time they realize that they're gone already. When the manager went to confront him in the parking lot, he tried to get away. He almost hit him.
Yeah, he tried to run away, hit the guy. He got arrested. He's in trouble now. You can't do that. You can't just put the name of a real pizza place, their logo, and then your phone number on it. But you know, it's kind of scary how easy this was to succeed for a bit, where people just call the number they see on the flyer, order the pizza from the guy, not really check anything else to see that it makes sense. And he'd show up with a sometimes frozen, sometimes undercooked, but often just store-bought frozen pizza that he was trying to pass off as Roman's Pizzeria. This is nuts. And that's good old Florida. As always, we know it. One other Florida story I saw out there that I thought was kind of interesting. A Florida man was busted when he checked in with his probation officer because he was carrying meth with him. He's like, oh man, I got, you know, a drug deal to do, or I have whatever's going on that I have this on me. You got to check in with the probation officer though. That's a rule. So he just goes there and the cop was like, I hate to ask. I don't know that this is exactly how this went. I kind of hope, but by any chance, are you currently high and is there currently drugs on you? And the answer was yes. CBS 12 in Florida covered this story. The mugshot of this guy looks exactly like what you think it looks like. He's got both a neck and an eye tattoo, which is kind of amazing. And he looks fairly high. But again, he decided that he didn't have a lot of time, so he couldn't go store the meth at his house or somewhere else. He had to go ahead and keep it on him when he checked in with the probation officer. Not a good call, although kind of him to make it so easy to arrest him again. Quick break, a lot more. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show. This is The Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Dana Lash is back tomorrow. Follow her on X, on Twitter, D-Lash or Dana Lash Radio. She's definitely very active there. You can also follow her at danaradio.com, all over YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, DirecTV 347, all over the place. The Odyssey app, you can find her podcast, iTunes, all kinds of places too. All right, let's do some stuff. First, I want to play just a crazy moment that's going viral. This happened at an event today for Democrats in which somebody said out loud that we have to act right for a certain number of days and then we can go back to being crazy. This is just funny. I just enjoyed hearing this. Here we go.
We got 70 days to act right, y'all. That's right. After 70 days, we can go back to being crazy.
That is at a Black Caucus event. They have Black Caucus and Democrats right up on the front, and a bunch of the people sitting on that panel are Black people. So that is what it is. If it's something that makes you mad or not, it's also just a fact. And then second, I want to play this. This is Michelle Obama last night taking one of the shots she took at Trump. Of course, even though Democrats claim that they go high when others go low, last night you had a whole bunch of shots taken at Trump, including what appeared to be a manhood joke made by Barack Obama about Donald Trump. That's as far as I'll say as far as that one goes. I'm sure he'll deny that that's what he was talking about, but if you watch it, you might think it is exactly what it seems like it is. But here's Michelle Obama saying something that went very viral about Black jobs, the often quoted thing that Trump said somewhat recently. Here we go.
I want to know. Who's going to tell him that the job he's currently seeking might just be one of those Black jobs?
All right, I'll stop it there. A whole bunch of applause, a whole bunch of whatever. So here's the thing. And I'm actually going to do something that might be, in the world of broadcasting, a version of suicide, but I can't help it. I wanted to dive into the actual data. Anyone who wants to take Trump's words out of context and make it sound like he's a horrible racist apparently can try to do that. And a whole lot of the left is doing it. What he said and what he meant to say, or at least what he said since when people ask him about it, is that immigration has a disproportionate impact on the Black community. That's another way to say it. That's the woke way, I guess, to say it if you want to. And guess what? This is actually well studied. I'll give you a few examples. There's a study from 1992 done by a couple people. The Center for Immigration Studies has it still published out there online. You can look it up if you want. I think it appeared in the new Pittsburgh Courier in November of 92. But it's all about a disproportionate impact between immigrants and the Black community and their ability to gain employment, their ability to, do other things. It also brings in incarceration rates. This is the study. This is not me talking. And it says that it definitively kind of proves this. Then we jump forward in time, and there's another study. This one is from 2007. This is published in The Digest, a free monthly publication featuring non-technical summaries of research on topics of broad public interest. This study was also done. It's a working paper, too. But it essentially says that from 1980 to 2000, an immigration influx has had a disproportionately negative impact on the Black community, 20 to 60% decline in wages, 25% decline in employment, 10% rise in incarceration rates. So 92, they say this. 2007, they say this. And then my favorite example, the Daily Beast, which is a fairly far left leaning website. If you look them up on any sort of a bias chart, they're going to score very far to the left. They had an op-ed in January of this year where a person who is a part of the Congressional Black Caucus talks about studies put out by the Congressional Black Caucus, and the conversation about how mass immigration hurts Black Americans more than anyone else. So there are versions of this voice that have been screaming this for a while, granted in different words, and then Trump says it in other words, and everyone goes crazy, like, how dare you? What's a Black job? Recently, Trump was asked that question, by the way, and he said any job is a Black job. It's just a job that's held by a Black person. That doesn't mean that there's only some jobs that can be gotten and some jobs that can't be gotten by people based on their race. It should absolutely be stated that that would be wrong. And I think Trump believes that and others believe that. And actually, you know what? There's something else that's kind of funny about this. So Jesse Jackson, Reverend Jesse Jackson, took the stage at the DNC to raucous applause. Just absolutely thrilled to see him there. Democrats have put on display what they think is an example of how much more diverse they are than Republicans. Now, what's funny about Jesse Jackson specifically is that back in 1999, he praised Donald Trump for a lifetime of service to African Americans. Those are actually his words. And I can play that audio for you, but it demonstrates how full of crap politicians are, because if a rich guy is giving you money and helping you do things that you're saying are impacting a certain community, then you love the guy. Then you talk about how willing he is to help the poor, the, you know, unfairly treated in our society, whatever the narrative is that people throw out there. But then in 2024, he's a horrible racist for saying something out loud that actually has a whole bunch of data that proves it, and a whole bunch of voices that have been complaining about this. I mentioned earlier that I live in Illinois, and I lived in Chicago for a very long time. I don't live there right now, which is probably good for me. But you would see on almost a weekly basis, the mayor, who's a Black man, Brandon Johnson, going into Black communities on the south side of Chicago and talking about the immigration issue. And the big thing about it that matters is that you saw Black men and women kind of getting upset with the mayor saying, you're hurting our community. People who are coming into this country illegally are moving into certain communities for whatever reason, and that's hurting those communities, and they're upset about it. This is their words. This is people within these communities saying these things. It's almost woke for Trump to be talking about this in some sort of terms, and yet he's violently getting attacked, at least rhetoric-wise, for saying it. But here, I'll play the other thing just to prove it to you. Jesse Jackson, just effusive with praise for Donald Trump and how great he is at helping the Black community. This is 20 years ago, darn it, but still something that at the time Jesse Jackson is saying is a lifetime amount of service to the community from this individual. Of course, Trump also donated to a lot of Democratic campaigns, including Jesse Jackson's in the 80s when he tried to run for president. Here we go.
I do want to express thanks to you, Donald Trump, for being with us tonight. We need your building skills, your gusto, your rent package for people on Wall Street who represent diversity. And we thank you for coming tonight. Let's give Donald Trump a big hand.
Shaking hands, happy. Thank you for being here. You're so great. We love you. We
a
love
big hand for Donald Trump.
I will tell you, a large percentage of the people, and especially in construction, that are building these great jobs are Black and minorities, and I'm very proud of it. We have close to 25%, and I think the number's going up, and they do a great job. There are no better builders than we have in New York, and a big percentage of that is Black and minority folks. So I just want to thank everybody in the room for being here. I look forward to some questions. And then I don't know how we're ever going to leave this building today, because if you look outside, it is terrible. But we'll figure a way. There's always a way. And thank you. And thank you, Jesse. And congratulations.
And Jesse Jackson goes on to say, thank you for your lifetime of service to the African-American community. That is real. That actually happened. And as Jesse Jackson got a standing ovation the other night at the DNC, you wonder what his current feelings are about. Well, you don't have to wonder. He said them out loud about Donald Trump and how that could change so much, and how all that work that was done that he said was being done for years and years and years somehow doesn't matter anymore. This is just true. This is just the world we live in right now, that you have to make someone into the enemy, into the bad guy. But again, I'm a white dude. I'm in my late 30s, and I'm telling you on air, on the radio, without fear, that there's data that backs up the idea. And if you want to say it the woke way instead of the way Trump said it, that illegal immigration, mass immigration, immigration in general, disproportionately harms the black community and specifically black men. That's not a thought that just bubbled up in my head because I'm a horrible racist who wants to tell you a horribly racist thing. That's a thought that's not even mine. That's out there all over the internet for you to go look at yourself from actual real studies done by actual real people who study this thing. I wouldn't exactly call them experts because it feels like at times there are no experts. But nonetheless, there's a bunch of people who say this stuff and have been saying this stuff for 20 plus, 30 plus years. And yet Trump says it on a stage one time and it's a constant attack, as so many other things are. But it is what it is, I guess. If you're Donald Trump, you just keep, you barrel along and ignore it as best you can. I guess one other thing I can play from the DNC last night, or you know what, actually, we'll skip that. We'll play that a little bit later. This one is crazy as far as a breaking news thing out here. This is a report that broke today, and I think I even have MSNBC's version of coverage of this, talking about how the federal government just assessed down the amount of jobs created by this administration by almost 1,800,000 jobs is the number that they were off, changing something that they thought was surprisingly promising as far as a valuable jobs creation number to something that's bleakly concerning to a lot of us and just how bad the economy actually is, something a whole lot of us know because we actually experience it every day, unlike the elites in Washington.
You know, the range of how many jobs they would take away for a variety of reasons, maybe the largest is the birth-death model for businesses, was going to be somewhere between 350 and 1,000 and 1 million. It comes in at 818,000.
818,000 jobs that they get the number off. I love that you're also saying, like, it could have been higher. It could have been even worse. That number is incredibly important, and those numbers are incredibly important because one of the only ways that Bidenomics is trying to convince the American people who should and seem to know better that our lives are not going as well as they tell us they are is this data. That they say, well, the data shows that things are better than you think they are. It'd be like someone walking up to you as your house is on fire and telling you the data shows your house shouldn't be on fire right now. You live in a community where no houses are on fire, and you look at them and you're like, yeah, but it is. It's on fire. And they're like, yeah, but it shouldn't. We're not going to call the fire department. We're just going to wait for it to go out on its own because it shouldn't be happening. And then, you know, you would scream and yell and do crazy stuff. That's what's going on. That's what the world is right now in so many of these ways. And yet they hope that you believe something else because they hope you're dumb. I love how often Democrats will say negative things about MAGA or Trump supporters or Republicans in general, about who they are, what they think, all that stuff. And then the reality is that that party treats their own supporters like people they know it's not. Even if personally they're not experiencing the thing that they think they're experiencing, they'll be like, yeah, it's fine, though. It's totally fine. All right, quick break, a lot more. This is Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
Not able to catch the full Dana Show? Follow Dana's Absurd Truth podcast and get news and laughs delivered in short, easy-to-digest episodes. Ideal for your busy lifestyle on Apple or wherever you get your podcast.
This is The Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. You can find her everywhere, D-Lash or Dana Lash Radio on X on Twitter. Let's do a quick five.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Thank you, sir. First, I love this. New York didn't make the top 15 for most foul-mouthed states in our country. It actually didn't even make number one for cities. Number one was Maryland at a swearing score of 66.3 per 1,000 tweets. They did this all on Twitter to see how often people say bad words, how often people curse. Georgia, 57 out of 1,000 tweets have bad language in it. I found this really interesting. New York, as I said, didn't come in as high as you would have expected, 40 out of 1,000. Other places, Illinois came in higher on the list. I thought the Midwest was supposed to be nice. South Dakota, the nicest, apparently. 21 out of every 1,000 tweets has a naughty word in it if you're from South Dakota. As far as cities go, this was really interesting. Number one was Baltimore as far as foul-mouthed individuals go. And then there were several others on this list, I think many of them in California, which amuses me quite a bit. Detroit came in at 5. I feel like if you're living in parts of Detroit, you might say a lot of bad words. It's not exactly the most. That's not the nicest right now. Baton Rouge, south of Fulton in Georgia, around out some of the top 5. This is great. I love the way they went about doing this because I guess it's not necessarily how often you say bad words in your private life. It's how often you say them on social media for everyone to see. Other things, Taco Bell is opening an early retirement community. It rewards specific lifetime members of the Taco Bell app and all the stuff that you get for free if you're on it. They're calling it the Cantinas, which is after the name of some of their restaurants. It seems like it has a golf course, an elevated, quote, dining space that will serve you Taco Bell, vintage thrifting experiences, arts, crafts, board games, and a pickleball tournament. They all happen within the early retirement community that Taco Bell is calling the Cantinas. I couldn't think of a worse thing to eat on a continual basis if you're at the age where you're not doing anything else. We're just kind of hanging out, retired, trying to figure out what to do with your life. You don't want to be in the bathroom that often if you're eating Taco Bell every day. And that's probably all they serve in the dining area. I'm not really sure if they serve anything else. Another thing out there I saw, I just thought this was interesting. A whole lot of people are calling it nonsense. If your boyfriend doesn't say they love you within 12 weeks, a relationship expert is saying that the relationship is over. Give up. It's never happening. 3 months, they better love you. Otherwise, move on to the next guy. That's terrible advice. Guys struggle to say this for all kinds of reasons. Even if you feel it, it might take a while. You might not articulate it out loud. I don't know. But I love it that this advice is something that's going viral and young people are sharing all over the internet. 12 weeks or else. And honestly, here's one last tip. If a guy feels like he wants something to keep going as far as a relationship, but he knows he has to say a certain word to make you stay, they might lie. I know it sounds horrible. The government lies to you. Sometimes men lie to women, too. That's out there. That's in the world. I said it. All right, quick break. A lot more. Greg Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
Brighten up your timely news consumption with The Dana Show podcast, where every update comes with a little dash of not so serious on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Thrilled to be with you. Bunch of stuff to talk about today. You can find Dana everywhere, D-Lash or Dana Lash Radio on X, on Twitter. DanaRadio.com, also a great way to find her. Let's do this. A couple things. First, Donald Trump was asked about RFK Jr. and gave a pretty interesting answer. He said if he gets an endorsement from Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he's likely to find some sort of role for him in his administration. There's a reason that I think this is actually way more powerful than mainstream media is going to tell you it is. And anybody that praises it is probably going to be called by those same haters, a Trump fanatic or somebody who loves Trump, which I don't really care if people call me that, but that's not necessarily the reason I say what I do. It's not necessarily true for me. Not that I hate the guy either. Definitely willing to vote for him. But here we go. First, I want to play the audio, and then I want to tell you why this matters, why this is important.
Can I ask you about RFK? Because just moments ago, his running mate said that they were considering endorsing you. Have you considered him for a role in the administration, and what role would that be?
Well, we haven't, but I would love that endorsement because I've always liked him.
Would you also consider putting him in the administration?
You're asking me a very unusual question. I haven't been asked that question yet. I like him a lot. I respect him a lot. I probably would if something like that would happen.
Okay, here's the reason that that's important. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Donald Trump don't actually agree on a lot of stuff. Mainstream media wants you to think that because they hate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. about as much as they hate Trump because of how much Robert F. Kennedy Jr. poses a threat to Kamala Harris, meaning that he'll siphon votes away from her, not necessarily away from the former president. But what I really think is interesting about this is even though they disagree on stuff, Trump is willing to consider putting him within his administration. And this actually goes to show how willing Trump is to work with those who have said really nasty stuff about him. The whole narrative that he's just out for vengeance. And if you don't bend the knee, you're never going to get a chance with Trump. Look at J.D. Vance and the things that he has said that now don't seem to matter as he is running as the, you know, vice presidential candidate on Trump's ticket. And I want to actually play something from Vance because he uses a narrative that was used a lot last night when the Obamas spoke at the DNC about how they grew up without a lot of stuff. And that's something that apparently is a core to the Democratic Party, is that you, appreciate people more than the elites do on the Republican side, the business elites, the people who made their money in the private sector. Granted, the Obamas are worth over $160 million now. They don't mention that part and how they made almost all of that money working in the public sector, which means they made it literally off of our tax dollars. But nonetheless, as I say all that, you got J.D. Vance out here saying that he also grew up without a lot and that he built his own opportunities and got to the places he's been in because he worked hard. And he believes that a good America is one where everybody has a shot at this. And he thinks that's a thing that already exists. And it's different than what Kamala Harris says when she wants to control the, you know, the outcomes of certain opportunities. Giving everyone an equal opportunity is a good thing. It's a thing we all deserve. We should all have a shot at every single job, and whoever the best is for that job should get hired. A lot of people think we already have that society, and we don't think we need to change it all that much to make it a better version of it. But equality of outcome is deciding that even if you're not the best person for a job, you get a job because you deserve the job because the outcome wasn't your fault, or at least the reason that you're not the best candidate isn't your fault. That's scary, and that's also easily described as communism. But here's Vance again talking about how rich, poor, black, white, doesn't matter. The opportunity should be out there, and it was for him.
I grew up in a family where there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity. I grew up in a family, Lawrence, you know, where we couldn't afford private security. So why did we need strong police? Because we believed that public safety was the right of every American citizen, whether yes. you're rich or poor. A lot of American kids don't have that these days because right. the Democrats have decided to wage war on so American true. Police. And I think if you tick through the issues here, we just believe in common sense. And we think that if you're governed by common sense, every kid in this country, black or white, rich or poor, is going to have an opportunity at the American dream. We just got to get back to that common sense. We're going to make that argument as much as we can and see how it lands, man.
Good. That's a great argument to make. You should make that argument because a whole lot of people do believe it. And anyone that's a success, actually, I'll say it this way. I don't mean to be overly provocatively, you know, focused on racial issues or something today, but the Obamas spoke last night and they obviously focused quite a bit on racial issues themselves. AOC threw on an accent when she spoke at the DNC that she doesn't normally have, which was weird. But here's the truth, like the actual thing. Anyone I've met in my life who is successful, whatever they look like, whoever they are, they're man, woman, black, white, I don't care. Anyone I've met that's had success would never say, never believe, and never even want to contemplate if that success is any way, shape, or form tied to what they look like, especially somebody who is of a minority group. I know a lot of very successful people that do not look like me. I'm a white dude. And these people would never say to you, you know, the reason I got my opportunity is because of the way I look or because of my ethnicity or because of this or that. Even right now, people get so mad when conservatives call Kamala Harris a DEI hire, even though Biden said several times before he picked his vice presidential candidate that he was going to pick a black woman. Which is weird. When you say that out loud, it does seem to take away from the value of the person you're picking because you just excluded a whole bunch of options for nothing other than race. So it makes you wonder, like maybe she still was the right choice. You could have just picked her and not said you were doing it. The problem with Democrats is they have to say the quiet part out loud. They have to tell you, they have to gain the political win. So they can't just hire somebody who looks different than them, say they were the best person for the job and move on, which is actually the society that everyone says we should get to. But nonetheless, anyone that I know that looks whatever way they look, they pride their success on hard work. They pride themselves on finding a path to get where they got and all the different things they did along the way as the reason that they're now in a place to be as successful as they are. And that's the American dream. And I'm sure that I'm not trying to say that anyone who doesn't have that is, you know, going to say that it was all their fault and they failed and they didn't try hard enough, whatever it might be. But this is essentially true. That successful people would not tell you the reason for their success is because they were given unfair opportunities. And in fact, they don't want them. And I don't want them. No one, I think, wants those sort of opportunities. And so it's so interesting to say out loud that you're going to provide them to people, but then also say that those people would essentially resoundingly reject that they got them if they even did. All right. Another thing out there that I saw, I just thought this was interesting. I contemplated putting this in like a quick five or something like that, but I kind of like it too much. And it's not politics. Let's call it a palate cleanser. Watching just 8 minutes of TikTok can have an immediate negative consequence on your brain, according to a brand new study. It's not just TikTok. It's any form of social media, but this one specifically, especially those short form videos that you scroll through of all different people and things. One study showed that in less than 10 minutes of exposure, you would feel bad about how you look. You'd feel bad about what you have. You feel bad about all kinds of stuff. The psychological harm can occur most impactful to young females. A lot of groups are impacted by this, but young females are impacted even worse than anyone else. 273 women between the ages of 18 and 28 ended up meeting the participation requirements that they sought to research from, I think, a school in Australia. and some other young people and found that this was, you know, overwhelmingly true. There are other studies out there that say that young women between those ages, or maybe even a little bit younger than that, like teenagers to 20 and 30 somethings, are more depressed than ever, contemplate suicide more than ever in our society. There's so many negatives here. And so something that's been screamed from the top of the rafters, however much it's been screamed, is that social media has this horribly profound bad impact on our lives. Now, I'm not trying to say that you ban it the way that Democrats are saying to ban it. I know what our society is built on. I know that Trump has now been an odd advocate for TikTok because it's more fair to him than, say, some other social media platforms are. But nonetheless, if this stuff went away or got replaced by something else or somehow, you know, something was done here, it wouldn't be all that bad. And I think a lot of parents believe this, that having less of a reliance, less of a focus on social media for their kids would be good. Now, granted, there's a couple ways to do that. One is for parents to intervene, to take these things away from their kids, to prevent them from being on them for longer in their lives, to do all those kind of things as a protection mechanism. And if your parents did that for you, for anyone that's young enough to have already gone through a life where social media was around the whole time, I'm, you know, a millennial in my late 30s who remembers when social media wasn't a thing for me, and it was a pretty good time. But if you prevent this, it seems like you're actually doing a lot of good work or a valuable impact to your kids. And I just can't get over that this study was so profound in demonstrating, you know, eating disorders, all kinds of things being a byproduct of this. And even schools who wind up taking away the phones from their kids in classrooms, taking away phones from students in classrooms, wind up benefiting the kids in the school. Because the other thing I've noticed quite a bit, and I have some nephews, I don't have any children of my own, but I have some nephews who are high school aged, is that they have so many viral videos that they describe on their phone of things that happen in school. Somebody who might have gotten beat up or something that might have happened, that lives forever on the devices of all the kids, which must make that even harder as an experience in school for anyone that's a part of any of those things. So taking those things away, preventing that from being a thing that's recorded and captured forever, I think probably also helps mental health benefits for children. So it's just something that's interesting to look at. I don't want the government to step in and be the ones to regulate this because they won't do it for the right reasons. They'll take away TikTok because it's helping Trump, but they'll leave Facebook and Twitter, or Facebook, Twitter's better now since Elon bought it, Facebook and other things, Instagram, I guess, owned by the same people, because those are uniquely censoring themselves the way that the government wants to. But it doesn't ruin that part of the narrative that there is damage that is done and easily done. And I just love the way that this goes, because it almost sounds like that. Like, I'll say it this way, and maybe I'll get hate for saying it this way, I don't know. Sometimes when you talk to somebody who's so adamant that, oh, we can't ban those things, that's horrible, that's terrible, that's wrong, they almost sound like an addict. Like, if you know anyone like this, they almost sound like they're so addicted to whatever it is, the device that they're on and the social media things that they go to. They're so addicted to it that if you took it away from them, they'd behave the same way that an alcoholic would who's going through rehab, or anyone else would. They can't function without it. And that's bad. I think that that's inherently bad in our society. So I think there's got to be some way to fix that, and fix that without, say, relying on the government to be the ones to do it, because they never do anything for the right reasons. Actually, you know what? I'm ranting now, and I'll just say this before a break. I've said that before about climate change to a young person, too, younger than me, and they look at me like I'm insane, and I love it, because that's a narrative. They're told all the time that the government and Democrats specifically want to fight climate change, want to prevent it, and then they hear from some people who say that they don't really think climate change is all that serious of an issue, and they get up in arms. But the truth is, the more valuable discussion is that the government won't do a good job fighting a thing if we give them an unlimited amount of money to do it. They'll do a terrible job. Look at the way they handled any sort of unemployment or any sort of, you know, investment in businesses during the pandemic and all the fraud that existed there and all the money they're trying to claw back from other places. The government is inherently bad at this and inherently corrupt, even though Barack Obama would like you to think something different. So it's just amazing to me that these young people or any voters out there can advocate to give the government more power or more money to fix a thing when you know they're the worst hands to put that in, as easily said by Ronald Reagan or so many others. And you know it to be true. No matter what side of the aisle you're on, you know the government functions poorly compared to, say, the private sector or just in general people in your lives. You know the parents would do a better job of preventing kids from something than the government would. That's just one example. All right, I'll take a break. A little bit more coming up. This is Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
Get the lowdown on the latest news with a side of laughs whenever you want. Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
Highly recommend that. This is Craig Collins filling in on the Dana Show. I subscribe to her podcast, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, DirecTV 347, and D-Lash or Dana Lash Radio on X on Twitter. Great ways to stay connected. A couple quick things. First, I'd play the audio for you, but it's New York and a lot of people weren't using good language. I'm from the East Coast, originally born in New Jersey. I'm a Yankee fan, so probably that's why this was on my radar. But somebody built a chicken bucket pyramid at a Yankee game recently, and security got very mad. They eventually kicked it down during the seventh inning stretch in a singing of God Bless America and brought the guy out. I love the fact that Yankee fans, at least for a little bit, were cheering chicken bucket, something they do anyway if you've ever been to a Yankee game. And then also yelling, "I thought this was America," during the God Bless America rendition as he's being brought out of that stadium for building and then having his chicken bucket knocked down. He was in the bleachers. It didn't seem like there was anybody sitting around him, and everybody was giving him chicken buckets, so they seemed happy about it. Ho-hum, bah humbug to the security that kicked him out. And that was wrong. If chicken bucket guy becomes a famous person, like Hawk to a girl, our society is just going to be even more and more awful. And I can't believe I just made that reference. But nonetheless, it's out there and I found it funny. A survey of 2,000 parents with school-aged children found that a whole lot of parents eat the leftovers from their kids' lunches as part of their dinner. Kids will reject certain items in the lunchbox, and parents want to finish that stuff off. You don't want to put it back in the fridge or back in the lunchbox. I used to do this all the time. A bunch of kids do this all the time. I found it hilarious that the parents are like, "Ah, darn it. I'm just eating this stuff when it gets home." Usually that's dad's role, I think. A dad is the garbage disposal of a family and usually does it willingly. All right, we've got about a minute left. Let's go ahead and do Today in Stupidity. Stephen, what do you got for today?
Amy Klobuchar was speaking at some type of side boardroom conference thing to her local congregation in Chicago.
Yes.
And she wanted to coin this phrase, but we'll see how it works.
Oh, here we go.
So psyched to see all of you. I decided instead of the MAGA movement, we're going to start the MAMA movement. That is Make America, Michigan, and Minnesota again.
Wait. By the way, give me the very beginning of that audio where she's just making like weird noises. I love both of those.
So psyched to see all.
Is she saying yes at the beginning? Yes. Before she says the MAMA movement. Oh, it's horrible. It's stupid. It's dumb. I love that. I want that as a drop, just the beginning part of Amy Klobuchar, because it makes me so... Give me it one more time if you still have it in front of you. Man, I can't figure out why people don't vote for these individuals, or why some of them, I guess, do. I guess I'm struggling harder to figure that part out than the sarcastic part. But that was uniquely stupid. But Mamala, or Kamala Harris, is something that SNL coined that I guess they're trying to go for, but Make America, Michigan, and Minnesota again. My gosh, the world we live in. All right, I'm out of here. Dana's back tomorrow. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.